demeanor on the part of the spectators, as befitted a people amongst whom religion and law were almost identical, and in whose character both were so thoroughly interfused that the mildest and the severest acts of public discipline were alike made venerable and awful. Meager indeed was the sympathy a transgressor might look for at the scaffold from such bystanders. It was a circumstance to be noted on the summer morning when our story begins its course, that the women, of whom there were several in the crowd, appeared to take a particular interest in whatever penal affliction might be expected to ensue. The age had not so much refinement that any sense of impropriety restrained the wearers of petticoat and farthingale from stepping forth into the public ways and wedging their persons into the throng nearest to the scaffold at an execution. Morally, as well as materially, there was a coarser fiber in those wives and maidens of old English birth and breeding than in their fair descendants. The women who were now standing about the prison door stood within less than half a century of the period when the man like Elizabeth had been the not altogether unsuitable representative of the sex. They were her countrywomen, and the beef and ale of their native land, with a moral diet not a whit more refined, entered largely into their composition. The bright morning sun, therefore, shone on broad shoulders and well-developed busts, and on round and ruddy cheeks that had ripened in the far-off island and had hardly yet grown paler or thinner in the atmosphere of New England.
"Good wives," said a hard-featured dame of 50. "I'll tell you a piece of my mind. We women should have the handling of such as this Hester Prynne. If the hussy stood up for judgment before us five, would she come off with such a sentence as the worshipful magistrates have awarded?" "People say," said another, "that the Reverend Master Dimmesdale, her godly pastor, takes it very grievously that such a scandal should have come upon his congregation. The magistrates are God-fearing gentlemen, but merciful overmuch. That is a truth," added a third autumnal matron. "At the very least, they should have put the brand of a hot iron on Hester Prynne's forehead. Madam Hester would have winced at that, I warrant. But little will she care what they put upon the bodice of her gown. What do we talk of marks and brands, whether on the bodice of her gown or the flesh of her forehead?" cried another female. "This woman has brought shame upon us all, and ought to die."
"Hush now," exclaimed a man in the crowd, "for the lock is turning in the prison door, and here comes Mistress Prynne herself."
The door of the jail being flung open from within, there appeared in the first place, like a black shadow emerging into the sunshine, the grim and grisly presence of the town beadle, with a sword by his side and his staff of office in his hand. This personage represented, in his aspect, the whole dismal severity of the Puritanic code of law, which it was his business to administer. Stretching forth the official staff in his left hand, he laid his right upon the shoulder of a young woman, whom he drew forward until, on the threshold of the prison door, she repelled him by an action marked with natural dignity and force of character, and stepped into the open air as if by her own free will. She bore in her arms a child, a baby of some 3 months old, who winked and turned aside its little face from the too vivid light of day, because its existence heretofore had brought it acquainted only with the gray twilight of a dungeon. When the young woman, the mother of this child, stood fully revealed before the crowd, it seemed to be her first impulse to clasp the infant closely to her bosom. In a moment, however, wisely judging that one token of her shame would but poorly serve to hide another, she took the baby on her arm, and with a glance that would not be abashed, looked around at her townspeople and neighbors. On the breast of her gown, in fine red cloth, surrounded with an elaborate embroidery and fantastic flourishes of gold thread, appeared the letter A. The young woman was tall, with a figure of perfect elegance. She had dark and abundant hair, and a face which, besides being beautiful from regularity of feature, had the impressiveness belonging to a marked brow and deep black eyes. Those who had known her before, and had expected to behold her dimmed and obscured by a disastrous cloud, were astonished and even startled to perceive how her beauty shone out. But the point which drew all eyes and, as it were, transfigured the wearer, was that scarlet letter, so fantastically embroidered and illuminated upon her bosom. It had the effect of a spell.